Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be an investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, we'll take them at the end of the call. David.Lundgren@HancockBank.com. Today on the call, I have John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, David Lundgren, Investment Director and Moderator, Luther McDougall, Investment Director, Greg Hudlewski, and Jeff Tangus, both Investment Directors as well. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and pass the call to Dave.
Thank you, Ashley, and I apologize for the technical difficulties that we're having this morning, and I may have to give reminders as people join late. Please put your phone on mute and do not put us on hold if you're a bank employee, because we'll hear the bank music throughout the call. So please try and remember not to do that. Let's go ahead and get started, John. I think we'll start this morning discussing the U.S. economy. And during the month of July, we received the second quarter GDP number, which came in, I guess, at a very unexciting 1.5% real GDP number, a little bit less than expected, not all that much less, but slightly weaker than I think a lot of economists were expecting. And it seems like we have a similar pattern to what we saw in 2010 and 2011, pretty strong first quarter, then weakening. What are your thoughts for the second quarter, and what are we looking like for the rest of the year?
If you break down the second quarter into the different components, there's fairly notable weakness in consumption. You saw that the growth in per capita disposable income just isn't there. So consumption still appears to be a weak spot. Also, government spending was down, kind of surprisingly, in the second quarter, which also had an impact. But it appears, as we've often said before, that we're probably on a 2% plus or minus GDP growth path now compared to the 3% that everyone considered normal in the years following World War II. Currently, if you look at the coincident indicators of economic activity, they appear to be, reasonably strong. And I say reasonably because they're not, giving above average signals as far as the economy is concerned, but they at least suggest that the economy is operating at an average level or at least is doing as well as it could at this particular point in time. But obviously the recession risk is still out there. Europe is mired in recession for the most part, and there's still a lot of issues with the European sovereign debt problem. One thing that seems to characterize the various views of whether we're about to have a recession or not, it depends on whether the organization or research group that's looking at the economy is paying more attention to the level of activity that exists today compared to what it should be, historically speaking, at this point in the recovery. And the others who are looking at the path of the leading economic indicators, in other words, if the leading economic indicators are continuing to rise generally as they are, then the researchers and analysts who are looking at that say, well, we're not likely to have a recession because, the leading indicators are still moving in the right direction. Conversely, if the people who are sort of looking at the level of economic activity recognize that we're not where we should be, and we seem to be, operating at a pretty weak rate in comparison to history, therefore we're probably more vulnerable to recession, and it's that group that is making the recession call at this point. But, looking at it all and putting it all together, it appears that, we're in a weak economic growth environment. The leading indicators are still in reasonably good shape, so it suggests that probably a recession is not an imminent event. Although, of course, if we go into a situation next year where with the fiscal cliff arrives and some of the, higher taxes that are due to occur, alleviated in some way, then next year, the risk of recession could be even greater. But currently, it looks like we're not in recession. We're just still in a in a relatively weak growth mode, and credit is growing. I've seen some recent figures on credit that look pretty good. However, when the analysts, again, begin to take apart the credit figures, they find that the growth in credit doesn't really match the sales and stuff. So some people are speculating that people are using their credit cards perhaps to, you know, carry them over a rough spot, you know, just for living expenses rather than, you know, really buying anything. So, you know, you can't really tell if that's true or not. But in any case, it seems to be a mismatch between the growth in credit and retail sales. So, again, it all probably still just points to, you know, continually weak, you know, relatively moderate, moderately growing economy.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. I apologize, but just as a reminder, again, in case anybody joined late, we're having difficulties with the line this morning where we can't go into broadcast mode. So please make sure that you put your phone on mute, and please do not place us on hold. Thanks. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
You know, you heard John talk a little bit about the, you know, the weak economic growth, but nonetheless growth that we're having here in the U.S. And I think, you know, during the quarter, one of the big concerns was jobs, unemployment rate. But last week we got a surprisingly, you know, pretty decent number, 163 jobs added in July, well above estimates. So that was good news. And I guess we're kind of in a unique situation to where if jobs, the job numbers continue to improve, then that should flow through and help, you know, keep the economy moving along. If we see another fall off in the jobs numbers, then the Fed will step in, and we may see QE3. What are your thoughts? What are your expectations for jobs going forward? But more importantly, will we have a quantitative easing 3 from the Federal Reserve?
Well, the last time the Fed met was August 1st, which was prior to this most recent employment number that came out. That was probably twice as much as the consensus. If I remember, the consensus might have been 80 to 90,000 jobs. The outliers, the most optimistic people, were maybe 125,000 jobs created. And as you said, it came in at 160, so much better, but still just really sort of one number in a long series of numbers. And while good news, we need to see a lot more of that good news. So the Fed met on August 1st, and at that point they were still and are today very concerned about the economy. Their two biggest concerns remain the fiscal cliff here in the United States, the expiration of all the tax cuts and all the spending cuts that are due to take place on January 1st if Congress doesn't take action. That's their biggest concern. The second biggest, of course, is Europe and what's going on there. So there was a lot for them to be concerned about, because at that point on August 1st, we'd had a pretty good run of disappointing employment numbers. So the Fed really was uncharacteristically blunt about being ready to take action and really having their finger on the trigger for another round of QE3 should that be necessary. They reiterated the fact that they really felt like they were going to keep rates low until the latter part of 2014. They came right out and said that they would provide additional stimulus or accommodation if they had to promote a stronger economy and improvement in unemployment. They cited the fact that the economy had slowed. They talked about spending. John touched on that a little bit. They talked about the slowdown in household spending. So there was, they did everything that they could to come out and say, we're ready to take action. We might even be ready to take action prior to the next Fed meeting, which is in the middle of September. So they were uncharacteristically blunt about being ready to take action if things didn't start going our way in terms of better economic news. So that was on August 1st. Of course, we had the employment number come out, and that number was better. I don't know that would change the Fed's mind a whole lot, but it was good news, and hopefully the start of a string of more positive news going forward. So the Fed at this point is really in the middle of carrying out what they announced several months back, which is their Operation Twist, which means we're not going out and putting any new money to work in terms of purchasing securities in the open market to drive rates down. But what we are doing is we're extending maturities. I think this week they're on track to take about $5 billion of maturing securities and swap those for longer-term securities. They're optimistic about the housing market. John mentioned some surveys and some numbers that have come in saying that banks are lending. The Fed is seeing that same information and seeing that a lot of that demand is in the form of mortgages, and that the Fed wants to do everything they can to keep that housing recovery going. So they're out there trying to buy those longer-term mortgage securities and drive down mortgage rates, or at least keep them down, so that the housing market will hopefully continue to show signs of improvement. So that's kind of where they stand right now. They are they're very ready to help the economy if need be, but at this point, it's probably going to be September. It's unlikely that they'll act before September, but if we continue to get some good news, they'll probably remain on hold. If we do see a slip in the economy, it would not be a surprise to see them come back in with another form of QE3.
Thanks, Jeff. Luther, you heard Jeff's comments in regards to Fed action, and I guess you know, central banks really across the globe have been in a easing mode, and they've had the ability to do so really because there's really hadn't been any inflation to speak of. And I guess, you know, the one thing that could upend the possibility of Fed action would be if we did see a spike in inflation. So give us your thoughts on the likelihood. What's your outlook for inflation?
Well, a few months ago in our monthly piece, I wrote about inflation, and the title was a clear but not so present danger, meaning that inflation is out there, and at some point down the road, probably much further than anybody originally anticipated, inflation will pick back up. But for now, there really aren't any signs other than brief spikes that we're really going to see anything. The most recent readings on the CPI for the end of June, where the CPI index was up 1.7% year over year, and the CPI, or the core CPI, which is ex food and energy, was up 2.2%. Core had been running at about 2 to 2.3% now for 11 months in a row, so it's pretty much stabilized. I think the Fed's target is somewhere around 2%, maybe a little bit less, so we're right about there. We will see probably in the overall CPI index a little spike as oil prices have risen a little bit, and because of the drought in the Midwest, underlying rate of inflation, whether you look at the CPI or the producer price index, the PPI, is relatively stable, and it'd probably be expected to continue in the current path, or maybe even decline a little bit as the economy continues in a stagnation mode. We're beginning to see anecdotal evidence of, if you will, say, price wars, or at the grocery store level and the department store level, more marketing, more discounted items is the only way to be able to entice consumers to come and spend. So that'll put downward pressure on pricing. The only thing right now, other than the food and energy that I mentioned, where we're seeing any type of price increases is in housing, and we're starting from such a low bottom that it really shouldn't have a whole lot of impact going forward.
Okay. Good news. Greg, let's talk about the stock market a bit. And pretty decent month for the market in July, up 1.4%. And that brought the S&P 500 year-to-date number to 11%. And I think a lot of people are surprised by that number. I think all of us on the call have had our share of client discussions where people just do not feel good about the stock market. And we did an informal, unscientific survey where we asked about 80 different people, you know, where they thought the stock market was through July. And a bit surprised by the results. And the way the survey worked, we asked, you know, from last year, do you think the stock market is down more than 10%, 0 to minus 10%, 0 to positive 10%, or up more than 10%? And I wasn't too surprised that a lot of people, you know, didn't know that it was more than 10%. Where I was really surprised is that 51% of the respondents thought that the market was negative this year. 28% felt the market was down more than 10%. So I guess my question for you is, why does up 11% year-to-date feel so bad for so many people?
Well, I think it's partly, you know, investor psychology. You've had this pattern that we talked about where the markets start out strong the last 3 years and then get weak because of the European crisis. So I think that's pretty fresh in people's minds. If you look at the VIX, it's spiked up quite a bit, which, of course, measures volatility. And so kind of roller coaster ride, I think, gives investors the impression that the market is down. And finally, I think the last thing that contributes to that whole negative psychology is that we've had a mixed bag of economic reports. Unemployment is still above 8%. I think that's the 42nd consecutive month that we've had above 8% unemployment. The impairment, labor impairment rate, which is underemployed and disabled workers, is 15%. Negative guidance that we're seeing for the third quarter, earnings estimates are about running 78%. So I think there's enough negative news out there that I think is coloring people's perceptions, and it just kind of flows over overall into the overall market.
Okay, makes sense. Do you have anything you want to add to that, John?
Just that all of us in the business know that the connection between the economy and the stock market is positive, but it can be a pretty loose connection at times. For example, the best time to buy stocks is when earnings are negative. The best time to sell stocks is when earnings have been positive for a very long time. And that's something that's hard for people to understand, I guess, really. The other thing is that in this particular case, yes, the economy has been relatively soft, and under normal circumstances in history, that would have earnings gains coming in as well as they have, but profit margins are extraordinarily high, higher than a lot of people, and companies have been very productive in recent years, and that's what's producing the earnings per share growth. In contrast, you know, to an economy that's just muddling along, corporations have done a lot better. But again, I think it's, you know, people tend to assume that the market and the economy move in lockstep, and that's just not the way it works.
Okay, thanks. Just a reminder, and I apologize, if you could, please mute your phones and please don't place us on hold. And then also, if anybody has any questions, please go ahead and email them to me at david.lundgren, L-U-N-D-G-R-E-N, at hancockbank.com. And, John, it wouldn't be a monthly call without us talking about the Eurozone. So if you could maybe bring us up to date on developments there.
You know, we all get tired of reading about this and tired of talking about it. And if anything, it appears the situation is getting worse and not better. The situation for Italy and Spain is becoming critical because, you know, their bond yields are high, and the cost of financing their governments now is, you know, it's beyond anything that is sustainable. The Germans and the French can't seem to get together on an agreement to move towards some sort of mutualization or socialization of risk, and as they call it over there, to come up with a plan to hold the Eurozone together, and it's beginning to look increasingly, you know, likely, of course, that Greece will leave. I mean, everybody's thought that Greece would be forced out or have to leave at some point, hopefully in a managed way. But now the talk is turning to Spain and Italy and wondering if you're eventually going to have a Northern Europe tier and a Southern Europe tier, you know, of euro, with maybe, you know, a different euro for the south and a different euro for the north. But in any case, the Bank for International Settlement put out a report recently that was really kind of downbeat in terms of the outlook for the euro and, you know, and whether or not the situation would, you know, work out for them, and that the euro would remain intact for a long time. So it's hard to know when it's all going to come apart or exactly how, but it's beginning to look more and more like the politicians will be unable to agree on, you know, a plan that will probably, you know, kind of solve the problem. So far, they just are trying to throw money at a problem, and it's not really working too well. So I guess we're going to have to have that in the background, you know, as sort of a, you know, an investing risk for some time to come.
Okay. Well, another investment risk that probably hasn't got nearly the press or attention is the situation in China. And I guess there's some concern about a potential hard landing there. Their economy is definitely slowing like economies across the globe. But give us your outlook on that situation and how big of a concern or risk is it to us?
China's latest GDP report, I think, was a little over 7%, somewhere around 7.5%, I think. And that's consistent with what economists would call a soft landing in China. A hard landing would be 5 or 6% annualized growth in China, which would produce all sorts of labor issues for them and perhaps a lot of internal disruption. China's been slowing for a good while, and people are becoming more concerned about the outlook for China. Recently, there appeared to be more money being pumped into the provinces, and some people take that as a good sign that you know, perhaps things are picking up. Others say it might be an attempt to cover up the bad loans in the different provinces of China that are about to create some problems. But in any case, it looks like China is still slowing. Obviously, if China slows more, there'll be less demand for commodities and so forth and so on, which will impact, you know, the economies in the West, and particularly the you know, countries like Australia that depend on China a lot for their wherewithal. It doesn't look like China's turned around yet. It looks like growth is probably continuing to slow. One thing to watch about China is the Shanghai market, which represents what's happening to companies inside China that the Chinese can buy. And the Chinese are not big, you know, market buyers. I mean, they've been primarily in real estate. But in any case, the Shanghai index is still declining, you know. So it looks like, you know, China is still in a declining growth mode, and where that will lead, of course, nobody really knows. But at least for the present, you know, China is again another negative influence on economic growth around the world, at least for the near term.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. Again, if you have any questions, please email them to me at david.lundgren@hancockbank.com. Ashley, it doesn't appear that we have any questions, so I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the call. We'll have the recording up on the website soon, so have a good day.